sort of a communication would be given us by this intelligence. And it is the belief of many of us, it has been the belief of thousands of people through history, that we have such a communication. We believe that the Bible is a communication from the greatest of all extraterrestrial intelligences. We believe that if we are to understand this universe, that the way to do it is to try to understand this communication. Now, while we believe that, it is sad that many who believe it take their knowledge and their understanding at second hand almost entirely. They look to other people to tell them what they should believe. They look to what they've been told or what influences they've heard and seen, instead of going to that communication and studying it and endeavoring to find from it the communication that has been given to us. God does not give such communications to everyone directly. He gives them to us in the Bible. Why does He not give them to us directly? Because He chose not to make us robots, not to make us individuals that were entirely programmed, although we are programmed to a very great extent. He chose to make us such that we could love Him and could follow His directions and could seek to do His will, but that we also had the power to turn away from Him and turn against Him. And humanity chose this course. And the result was that there are now communications from others which will lead us astray. We depend too much on communications from other people. And there are spiritual forces that can mislead us. And we can be affected by our experiences in various ways that can put ideas into our minds. And so while we believe that God did put ideas into the minds of people in ancient times, and that He did it in such a way that they could know absolutely that these messages came from God, yet we believe that He chose that we should have His communication in written form such that we could know that this is His, and we do not have to try to decide whether a feeling we get or a dream we get or something of that kind is from Him or from some hostile spiritual force. Well, now, how are we to know that this is indeed a revelation from God? Sagan has very interesting suggestions. How are we to know that we really have a communication from extraterrestrial intelligences? Well, he has some very interesting statements. He says, for instance, supposing we get a radio message from outer space that gives the prime numbers one after another, gives us the first 20 prime numbers, we would have there an evidence of an intelligence that was not simply a random thing. He suggests various types of scientific information which could easily be put into a message, and when we would read it, we would know that there was an intelligence there. And the wonderful thing is that God has given us evidences similarly, evidences to show us that we do indeed have a revelation from Him that really is dependable. There are many types of such evidence. I was very much impressed once in reading certain passages in the Scripture to notice a change in the Hebrew tense. I noticed that it speaks many times in the Scripture about God's greatness, and it tells how God founded the universe and He stretched out the heavens. This occurs a number of times in the prophetic books. But then I noticed this would be very interesting to think of Him initiating this great big bang, if that's the way it all started, His putting things in their place, starting everything. But I noticed that in about half the cases, where it refers to God stretching out the universe, that it uses a different term. Instead of using the past, it uses the participle, which is normally used for a present action. It says God is the one who is stretching out the universe. And I'm sure that the full implications of that were never really understood until within these last few decades, when the discovery was made that evidences point so definitely to the universe being not have merely once having been stretched out, but being in process of being stretched out. Here was a bit of information which was placed there in the scripture for us to find and see that God knew it all the time. And while he did not undertake to give us instruction on all the facts of science, he puts in certain facts in the scripture so that we can note them and see the evidence of his complete knowledge. We have many interesting books from ancient times, many great classics, and in them we often find, along with beautiful, sublime thoughts, we find most absurd ideas. But we find nothing like that in the scripture. But we find hints of matters often, which we discover and find it was there in the scripture all the time. One of the most prominent names in this century was the name of Sigmund Freud. And Sigmund Freud, in his early days, met a great deal of opposition because of the new theory that he had. This theory is the basis of most present-day psychiatry. As he went on, Freud added many theories, some of which were good and some of which were, I believe, very bad, some of which are still held and some of which have been abandoned. But his original discovery was a very great one. The discovery that there was something more than a person's physical body and a person's present mental consciousness, that there was a subconscious of which the man might not be aware, but which affected his consciousness, affected his actions. He had a patient who could not lift his arm, and they could find no physical cause for it. And he found that in the subconscious there was a cause for this situation. And Freud was laughed at and derided for a time for what people thought was his crazy theory. But when they finally adopted it, then they went to the other extreme and began to take most any view that he would choose to present, some of which were good and some of which weren't. I was much interested in reading the book of Romans, the 8th chapter. The 8th chapter of Romans, the 28th verse, is very well known to most Bible students. But I'm not sure that the previous two verses are so well known. But it was most interesting to see what they reveal. We read in the 26th verse, "In the same way the Spirit helps us in our weakness." There is no "in" in the original. It is the Greek datum. He helps in relation to our weakness, in relation to our infirmities. "We do not know what we ought to pray, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groans that words cannot express, and he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit." He searches our hearts. He sees things there that are not obvious to us. Those words, "with groans that words cannot express," that used to puzzle me when I was a boy. I used to think the poor spirit that couldn't express his groans, that he could not express his thoughts. Well, when you look at the Greek, you'll find that that "with," like the "in" we looked at before, is simply an insertion to try to give in English the sense of the dative. Of the Greek dative. And if you take the Greek dative here exactly as we do, where he helps in relation to our infirmities, Here he intercedes for us with respect to the groans that words cannot express. He searches our hearts. Here is the subconscious. Here are the groans that we can't express, the troubles that we don't understand, that can affect our spirit, affect our minds, and can affect our bodies if they are not dealt with. How wonderful to have the Spirit of God for your psychoanalyst. How wonderful to be able to go to Him to search your hearts, to find the needs and the problems there that you do not understand, that you cannot express, to bring them into the light and to get rid of them. And if we do that, it is unlikely that they will become buried so deep that we will have to get a psychiatrist to deliver us from the difficulties that they bring to us. Here it was a tremendous discovery that Freud made, but it was there in the scripture all along if we would just study the communication that God gave us to see what it actually teaches instead of building our ideas simply on what human beings say or observe or feel. Of course, one of the very greatest evidences of the fact that we have actually a communication here is the ability to predict the future. And that is something that we find in the Bible, that God not merely deals with what is, but He deals with what was going to happen at a time long after, at a time when the prophets actually did their writing. Now, God did not set out to give us a full view of the future. Some people sometimes think that you can go to the Bible to find history written in advance. Well, that is a phrase which is quite all right if properly understood. But we are quite apt not to understand it. What do we mean by history? If you take a history written 50 years ago, almost any book of history 50 years ago was largely an account of kings and battles. You get a history written today, and they assume a secondary position. The interest is in how people have lived and in great forces and attitudes of people. History has changed. History is not just a series of events. History is an attempt to understand these events. And if you simply wrote a history, tried to describe everything that happened today and everything that happened the next day and everything that happened the next day, it would be so full of material you couldn't get any meaning out of it or any understanding of it. So, in a sense, when God predicts the future, it is history in advance, though in another sense, it's not. We don't realize, any of us as a rule, how little we really know about the facts that are of importance in our own history. If I were to ask one of you to tell me where your mother's father's mother was born, I wonder how many of you could tell me. How many of you could tell me when she was born, how long she lived, any facts about her life. We're here. We know a little about our parents, a tiny bit about our grandparents. Before that, we have very little knowledge, most of us, about the background out of which we come. God is not attempting in the scripture to give us, satisfy curiosity, but He deals with the problems of life, and He, in the course of it, He gives glimpses of events that would happen hundreds or thousands of years after the books of the Bible were written as evidences of the fact that there was an intelligence at work there, an intelligence that gave information, facts that no human being could naturally, of his own volition, have had. And so, fulfilled prophecy is one of the great evidences of the fact that this is indeed a communication from the greatest of all extraterrestrial intelligences. Of course, the greatest revelation that God gave was when he actually came to this earth in the person of his Son, Jesus Christ. No one has ever known of a life more perfect than Christ. I've heard it said that no fictional character has ever been invented that was more perfect than the life lived by Jesus Christ. He is absolutely unique. He showed us what God is like. And as we look at the accounts of the life of Christ, we find that in the Old Testament, point after point was specifically predicted in advance. Not predicted in such a way that we could lay out and tell exactly how it would happen, but predicted in such a way that we could look back and see that this exactly corresponded to what happened. It tells where he would be born. It tells of how he would be born. It tells where he would do his first preaching. It predicts his healing work. It predicts many of the events of his life. It predicts the manner of his death. It predicts the fact of his resurrection from the dead. Evidences that this is indeed a communication from the great extraterrestrial intelligence. Oh, it would be very interesting if we get communications from distant intelligences. This would be interesting indeed. But whether it would be helpful to us, we don't know. It's interesting, in Sagan's book, there's a very interesting illustration of the difficulty of expressing ideas in words. He says he's not sure whether this is true or not. He thinks it might not be true, but at least it illustrates the point. According to the story which he evidently had heard somewhere, someone had invented a machine that could translate from one language into another. And so they wanted to show a senator how it could translate. They said, give us a sentence and we will put it into Chinese. The machine will put it into Chinese. So he said, out of sight, out of mind. And so they pressed a few buttons and out came some Chinese signs. But the senator couldn't read the signs. So the senator said, now put these Chinese words back into it and let's see what it says in English. So they put the Chinese symbols back in. And instead of out of sight, out of mind coming out, it said, invisible idiot. Which I think is a very good illustration of the difficulty which we may very well have if we should get a communication from some very, very distant planet. We can't expect to understand everything in the Bible. There are similar difficulties of interpretation. There are matters that people have puzzled over. And then as situations in the world change, we see how they exactly fit the situation. And there are matters in the Bible probably that were perfectly clear a few centuries ago to people. And as our culture and situation has changed, we don't understand them today. The communication has been given us which is suitable for the needs of God's people in all ages. And how wonderful it is to have this communication. How wonderful it is to be able to study it. How wonderful it is to be able to find in it the explanation of what life really is. That we don't have to look forward in doubt and despair and wondering whether we're going to disappear into coldness, deadness, or whether you're going to be in a great flaming explosion. But to know that there's meaning to life, and that whatever happens, God has a purpose. Sagan says in his book here that the quasars, he says, seem to be explosions which probably destroy as many as a million worlds in one great fiery explosion in the heart of a galaxy. And one fiery explosion, a million worlds, many of them, he says, probably inhabited. He may wonder whether in our galaxy such an explosion can happen. We know that it can't, unless it be the will of the one who has made it and has programmed it, that it work out in accordance with his plan. So, it is interesting to speculate on these matters, and I believe we should think things through and seek for evidence and not simply follow any human being. But it is wonderful to know that we have a communication from the greatest of all extraterrestrial intelligences, and to know that we can find in it the answer to all the problems of life. Now, I wonder if there are any questions in connection with this subject that anyone would like to ask. Or have we covered all phases of it sufficiently? Yes? A little louder, please. Yes. Yes, the idea of that chapter is that our dreams and our feelings and our fears are perhaps due to the experience of birth. It is an attempt to explain on a purely material basis feelings and so on. Now, some may be due to that, undoubtedly, but that is the full explanation of life would seem to me highly questionable. I would think it might very well affect certain things. Although it is far more likely that it is that our genes, our constitution, affects us far more, I think, than that one particular experience among the many experiences that we have. The story is told about Gladstone, who used to be thought of as one who knew just about everything. And so I think someone was trying to make fun of him a little. They said that Gladstone, when he was in his cradle, saw the maid who was to take care of him reach into her pocket and pull out a bottle and take a drink and put it back, and that he resolved that as soon as he learned to talk, he would tell his parents about it. Well, that is, I think that the idea that that one experience of birth or the feelings before would affect us, it is a theory which would be impossible to prove, I would say. Any other questions? I have usually found that everybody wants to be third. And if you can get two, there probably would be a dozen after that, more than we would have time for. Yes? Yes. Yes. Of course, that, I was planning on speaking on that tomorrow night. I mentioned about the prophecies about the life of Christ. There is in the ninth chapter of the book of Isaiah. There is at the beginning of the chapter a reference to the parts of the land of Israel where the Assyrian army entered in the time of Isaiah. It says, "Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Nebulun and the land of Naphtali, but in the future, he will honor Galilee of the Gentiles by the way of the sea along the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light." And Matthew quotes that in connection with the first preaching of Christ, which began at that particular area that was here described as the place where the light would come. And where it here describes the light beginning there, in the fifth verse, in the sixth verse we read, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, And that, of course, could be merely parallelism. But yet, it does fit with the teaching of the New Testament that he was a child of Mary, but that he was the Son of God. And then the sixth verse says, continues, he will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Well, how would anybody 700 years ahead predict such a name for an individual who would be born and who would bring glory to people in that particular area? I think it's a very clear evidence that God knew exactly what he was going to do that far ahead, and that this is indeed a communication from him. Any other questions? Usually after two, there are plenty. Yes? Yes. I think that from Revelation one can tell a good deal about matters that are going to happen, but I don't think one can tell when it's going to happen. And in any writing, there is the difficulty in knowing what is literal and what is figurative. And so I would go slow about being too sure that we can tell many precise details. Though I think when the things predicted there happen, we will be able to see how exactly they correspond. Yes? Fine. No, I do not think so. I would say we have no proof that there is life on any other planet, but we have no proof there isn't. Sagan says definitely in the scripture here, in his book here, he says that there is no reason to understand that there is a God who created the universe, nor is there any evidence that there isn't. He doesn't know whether it is or isn't, he specifically says. Well, I think we can say the same thing about life on other planets. What does God do with us when we die? Are we in a disembodied state? Does he perhaps then move us to some other planet? We just don't know. It's entirely possible. It is I think the mistake many Christians have made through the ages is to say something can't be. And they then when we find proof that it is, somebody says it's proof the Bible was wrong. But that was purely their theory. If the Bible correctly understood, carefully interpreted, will not say it isn't true. Now, we have no proof that there is life on any other planet. The only reason for assuming such a thing is there are so many stars. I believe there's only one case where there's evidence as yet that there may be planets, another planetary system besides ours. But if there are in billions of them, there may be such life, and it would not affect the scripture one way or the other, I would say. Yes? Yes? Person like who? Yes. He gives a great many things that we don't fully understand, mostly like big stones, monuments standing somewhere, or like something that looks like writing that we can't read. There are many things that we don't understand, but I don't think there are many scholars who feel that his evidence is really conclusive that there were actually visits from any from other planets. There, of course, have been great civilizations on this earth that have left little light, little information of them. If there could be many things that happened long ago that we don't know anything about, but that people actually came here from another planet, I would say his evidence is much too little to lead us to such a conclusion. Yes? No, I wouldn't think so. I would think he simply goes beyond what there is evidence in his conclusions. Not necessarily in the fact he gives, but in the conclusions he draws from. Yes? You. Yes?